Accession number 18199, Reel 4.
And he had his Sten gun over one arm and his slacks and his shirt over the other. So the BM, the old BM, said, "Oh," he said, "here's one of our well-dressed Australian allies." And he rolled the Jeep up very quietly behind this Aussie, who was completely unaware we were there. And he suddenly said to him, "Good morning to you." And the Aussie turned round, saw two officers, tried to salute because he couldn't, because he had his Sten gun and he was sort of flapping his Sten gun and his slacks and his shirt around in one hand, and just sort of said, "Oh, good day to you, mates." And because the old BM was chuckling, I was laughing, the old BM was laughing, I think the new BM, he just couldn't believe what he was saying. You know, it was so funny, really. And then, because BM left, and I was just doing odd jobs, the brigade moved back in the line, and I did the 10-line F&F job again. And while we were back in the line, we did what they called a skunk hunt, which was occasionally, as I said, there was all these gorillas and all sorts of funny people hanging about behind the lines. And occasionally a vehicle or something would be shot up, or sentry would be bumped off, or some stores, something stolen. And what they would then do was organise these skunk hunts, which were like box sweeps in the hills all around, and you were sort of raked in as infantry for the day because the infantry had other things to do. And on this particular position, we surrounded this bunch of hills. Allerton was in charge. He loved this sort of thing. He was very flamboyant. And there were some new lads there, and he said to me, "Narby," he said, you can look after these." And he said, do everything that Larby does," he said to them. So we started off on this box sweep, and we got to the very end, and there was a sort of a wooded knoll in the top, and there was a paddy field in between with a barbed wire fence running across. We'd searched several bunkers, there was nothing in them. They were Chinese bunkers, which were quite elaborate and very, very clean. There was like a small outer chamber, then there would be a narrow tunnel which would go in probably about 10 or 12 feet into quite a large inner chamber, quite big, but always spotlessly clean. There was no debris of war in them at all. There was nobody in them, of course. And then we got to this last little bit with this barbed wire fence, and Allerton called me over and he said, "Well, if there's anybody running before this sweep," he said, "this is the last place they can possibly be." He said, "What I'm going to do," he said, "I'm going to go across in threes like the British Army always does." He said, "I'll go over first." He said, "Then when we take cover in the thing," he said, "you cover us." He said, "then send the second lot over." He said, "then when we're over," he said, "then we'll call you over." I said, "okay." Over they went. Second wave went over. He waved to me, "right, come on." So I said, "come on, kids, let's go." And we ran across, over this wire fence. And when I got on the wire fence, I got stuck. You know, barb caught right into my snacks. I don't know how long it was there, but it seemed like an eternity. And I thought, well, if there is anyone in that hill, here I am, stuck on this fence. He can't miss me. And I think the only time I really sort of panicked, and I literally tore myself off the fence, you know, ripped my snacks. But it seemed like an eternity, but it couldn't have been very long, really, because with any... Yeah, I got the other side just the same as all the others. Because when we got up to the top of the knoll, there was nobody there. It was empty. Whoever they were, whatever they were, weren't there. As far as I know, nobody picked anybody up in any other location. So I was doing all these various little jobs at brigade. I never had any really permanent job. I just think we're relieving people all the time. And then it came quite a surprise to me to be told that I was being posted again, which was by this time was about August of 1952, and my time was up quite shortly. And I had to report to HQRE at Fort George, which is the main division headquarters. When I got there, I was greeted by an officer called Captain Crofton, a Royal Engineers officer, who understood that I was a regular. And I said, well, no, I'm not. I'm National Service. And I said, what's more, I'm due to go home probably in 5 or 6 weeks' time. He was quite disappointed in that. He said, oh, well, I've been given wrong information. He said, well, I'm sorry about this. He said, but, well, said, well, I just have to make the best. I hope you'll be happy serving me. And he's the only officer who ever greeted me with a handshake when I joined his unit. And he was killed, Captain Crofton, sometime later, trod on a mine. And, you know, you can truly say he was an officer and a gentleman. And probably the nicest officer I ever met. Anyway, this particular little job, the Imjin River, during the monsoon season, floods. And the cliffs that I talked to you about, the river in flood would come to the top of those cliffs. It was like the gorge. It would, obviously, over the years, it had made its path through the countryside. And what had happened, because the pontoon bridges were no longer viable, they built high-level bridges. And the one by Fort George was called Pintail Bridge. And it would stretch right across from one bank to the other, one bank of the gorge to the other. And what we were doing was monitoring the progress to make sure it'd be finished in time, which it was. And then once the bridge had been built and the floods came, which they did, we had to monitor the effect of the floods on the bridges. Now the river, the monsoon came, it rained and it rained for I don't know how many days. The river rose and rose, and as it rose, so it started to bring debris down with it, you know, tree trunks, bits of buildings, all sorts of things. And it actually got to, it was actually the top of this gorge, and the water was actually swilling over the top of the bridge. And there were teams of Canadian engineers on the bridge, and they had to ward off the debris as it was coming down. We had to drive over to make sure everything was all right. And it was quite frightening, really, because you used to drive across the bridge one truck at a time. You couldn't have more than one in case the thing collapsed and you got washed away or something. So you just went one truck at a time to make sure it was okay to go across and that the bridge was holding. The engineer officers would obviously inspect the bridge to see how it was. And it was quite scary because as you looked out the truck, all you could see was the water swirling towards you, you know, trees coming towards you. You could actually feel the bridge shaking. So you got the other side, quite relieving, but of course you had to get back. Then the floods started to subside as quickly as they came, really. There was one incident one day, I was on the radio, I wasn't actually out, when the Americans reported that an engineer from one of their bridges had fallen in the river and was being swept downstream. So all the bridges, which were all on this radio net, right from the Americans right down to the Marines who were on the sea, American Marines that is, to try and fish the guy out. Well, we tried to, but we missed him, we couldn't get him. But he was actually fished out by the Marines. So he'd gone about probably 5 or 6 miles down the river. But he was okay, it's all right. He's quite happy, survived. The river was very treacherous. Because even when it went down to its low level, you could wade across it, but there was very treacherous currents. You could feel them grasping at your feet. There was a number of people got drowned in the river. You know, just recreational swimming. Anyway, the monsoon went. I was given a boat home. It was cancelled. Didn't seem any point in trying to go back to 28 Brigade, really. So I just sort of idled my time out then. There wasn't very much happened then for the last 3 or 4 weeks of my time. Just on a normal radio net. And then, I can't remember the exact date now, the order to come home. And I could make my way, but I had to go to the Signals HQ, so I made my way over the hill from HQRE to the Signals HQ. There was a truck waiting for us and took us back to Wee John Boo on the train home. And we went back to Pusan, was there about a week. The Norfolks were actually coming home at the same time, but they were going to Hong Kong. And I remember that they paraded to go to the Pusan Cemetery to pay their respects to the graves of the Norfolks there. And we were rather upset that we were not allowed to go and pay our respects to our people, but they didn't seem to think it mattered for us, you know. The only other thing I remember there was Carol Carr, the singer, who died quite recently. She gave a concert there. And went down to the docks. Norfolks went on board first. And they were given speeches and so on. Then the rest of us just filed on. And I was actually the last one to go on the boat. And so an American NCO there slapped me on the back and said, "Thanks for coming, buddy." And I thought, well, you know, at least somebody appreciated me. And then really we just came home and Hong Kong, some of the guys that I had met in Hong Kong, they got back on board there. But because we were actually late for demob, actually, they said they were being taken off at Singapore and being flown home. I made inquiries whether that would be so, and they said no. If you were in Korea, you would stay on the boat. Colonel Slay Powell, the CO of 14th Field, he was also on the boat. And he recognised me and spoke to me. So, though I got up his nose once or twice before, he obviously didn't hold it against me. He was quite a good officer, really. Very eccentric. And we got back to England. I think it was November. November the 1st, I think. Just went up to Solent, nobody there to meet you. Very quiet. When you look at them, when the Falklands coming home, you know.
What was the general attitude in Korea towards the enemy?
Towards the Chinese?
Yeah.
I think that people respected them. They were good soldiers, there's no doubt, and their field craft was excellent. I don't really think anybody hated the Chinese. They might have done the North Koreans, because they were cruel and vicious people. And so were the South Koreans, come to that. I don't think we had any great liking for the South Koreans, but I think most people respected the Chinese. And I don't ever remember anyone hating them or anything like that. Maybe the POW might have done, but I think it was a respect for them.
Did you have much to do with South Korean civilians?
No, no. The front line at that time, this was a static war really, so the front lines had been cleared of Korean civilians. You hardly ever saw any. The only Koreans you had were what they called KSC, Korean Service Corps. They were like a labouring detachment attached to you. And you did have CATCOMs, which were Korean soldiers attached to you. And we had about three who were obviously far more intelligent than the average Korean peasant. They were quite clever blokes, you know, probably technicians or something in civil life.
Were you training them or something?
Yeah, they were supplementing our units and they were sort of being trained, you know. We used to call them CATCOMs, that was Korean attached to Commonwealth. Then the Americans called them Katushas, Koreans attached to USA.
What was the work of the Korean labourers who were attached?
Well, they would build bunkers, dig trenches, generally clear up the area. build roadways. Not a road, because roads are always getting damaged for the trucks and so on.
What do you feel now about having served in the Korean War?
I suppose I'm glad I did, because it was an experience. And also, through the Korean Veterans Association, I've made lots of friends and people that I wouldn't have normally met. And also, of course, I've been back to Korea on a revisit. I've been to the USA, Canada, Belgium, Holland, met Korean veterans there, which I wouldn't have probably done otherwise. Not in the same, because I mean, they're born in these countries, of course, but not in the same context. But you're going there meeting people with a common ground, if you like.
How were you received in Korea when you went?
On the revisit?
Yes.
Well, like royalty. Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't do enough for you.
And how do you feel about having done national service?
Glad I did it.
Do you think it did you any good?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Did you any harm?
Didn't do me any harm, no. Well, perhaps that's not quite true. When I first came out, I did have problems settling down. Mainly, I think, because when I went back to my old job, though you were supposed to have the old job back, they wouldn't give it to me. So I had a few rows with them, and I tried to get other jobs elsewhere, but not very successfully. So in the end, I more or less forced them and say, well, you've got to take me back, and they gave me a job that was far inferior to the one I'd had, or one I'd been promised. So I think I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder for a little while. But I think that's basically because I didn't get the job back that I'd been promised, really. Had it out of been given it, I don't think it would have happened. So I didn't stay very long, rather messed them about a bit. And I couldn't settle down any other job I went to. I couldn't settle down, really, for a while, you know. Anybody tell me what to do, I'd tell them to get lost and all that sort of thing. And then eventually I started working at Lucas, or CAV as it was then, and which I quite liked it and quite settled down there, and all the problems sort of went then. For times, there was a few times I felt like going back into the army.
What was your state of health like in Korea?
Mine was good, yeah. I never had any problems. And I've not had any since.